Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you've caught up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Wednesday, September 25th. Coming up, Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats and Information Network. You also see him on the Daily Wager, and you read his stuff as well on ESPN.com's Chalk section. And then John Murray will join us for some sharp action from behind the counter. What's going on at the Westgate? A lot of intriguing games. I mean, we can say that every week because it is college football. They're all intriguing, especially when you add in the point spread. But I like a lot more plays this week than I do last week. I was pretty empty last week, but I definitely have some firm opinions. I got to work on it and submit my plays for ESPN.com's Chalk section. Travis, how are you, my friend? Are you a full-blown degenerate yet?
Not full-blown yet. It takes, I think now we need to get a conference play, and then I think that's, which is kind of this week going forward, where that'll start to, you know, get me to be a degenerate.
Because you're done with College Game Day.
Yep.
You're now all ours in the podcast world. Good. And I know you do Baron Steves as well, so you're double dipping on Wednesdays, just really soaking it all
in. Yeah, Wednesdays is just like bathe me in gambling, like just Vegas all over. I feel like I should be allowed to start drinking at like 8 a.m. on Wednesdays here.
Yeah.
Like,
that's fair. Bathe him in gambling. I think we need to get that drop as well. I mean, as much as I love Bob Lee.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
But bathe me in gambling, I think, is the new one.
Yes.
Let's get to Murray standing by. We'll do Matt Eumanns first.
Pay that man his money.
Matt Eumanns, Vegas Stats and Information Network, joining me. Matt, you know, you're getting quite the reputation, which I'm appreciative of, but the fast food knowledge is spreading.
Doug, I've been a fast food fanatic for many, many years. And I've always said that the key to a life like that is you have to work out a lot, too, because otherwise I'd look like a George Costanza. And nobody wants that. But last night, I'm still in San Diego. I'm headed back. I went to the last Taco Tuesday of the season at Petco Park. And I have to tell you, if you ever have a chance, you want to go to the Seaside Market. This is my first tip of the day. The Seaside Market in Cardiff by the Sea. Get the tri-tip. They have it at the Del Mar Racetrack, and they have it at Petco Park at Taco Tuesdays. Phenomenal tri-tip, and that's the best bet.
I told you a long time ago. About a decade ago when we had our radio show, that you should start a blog called The Fast Food Snob and write about that, because your journalistic background does not let you wing anything. You are very thorough. So when you have these kind of tips, like you just explained, it is well-researched, well-thought-out, and well-presented. So our listeners certainly appreciate it.
Well, my focus this week is trying to come up with some more college football winners. Doug, this has been a really strange season for me. It's either hot or cold. I've had a couple of really bad weeks, and then I had one phenomenal week, and then last week kind of back to reality again, where it was very mediocre. But let's see what we can come up with on this week's card. I like some games here. I think I got about six plays for you today.
Yeah, I have about a similar amount. I want to talk some through. That's always I told our editor for ESPN Chalk that I need to submit my plays later today because my process is talking about on the pod. So he understood, because I'm doing well. I've won like four or five games by a hook. So very fortunate, let's call it. So you know what's coming next. But, hey, at least our UCLA team finally showed up, just not when we backed them. But at least people understood that the potential of this team, that we talked about playing a team like San Diego State or whatever. I don't want to complain too much about losses in the past, but that's sort of the capability of the Bruins we thought was there at some point.
Yeah, UCLA scored 14 points in each of its first three games. You know, they just didn't see any signs of life with that offense. And then down 49-17 at Washington State, I was like, well, glad I stayed off the Bruins again this week. I would have lost on them again. And then they launched a comeback for the ages and win that game 67-63. I'm still not sure what happened. I watched that whole game. It was a turnover circus, especially for Washington State. I mean, I've never seen a game at the Division I level where a quarterback had 9 touchdown passes and lost a game. And it just snowballed in the wrong direction on Washington State. I don't know what the truth is with UCLA. It's probably somewhere in the middle. The Bruins are not as bad offensively as they were in the first three losses. They're nowhere near as good offensively as they looked against Washington State. But if they can be what they were at the end of last season, I think UCLA averaged about 31 points a game in the final four games of last season. If they could be something close to that, Chip Kelly's got a team that could be, you know, competitive in the Pac-12 and not an embarrassment like it was the first 3 weeks. But, you know, I was really, really disappointed with UCLA's performance against San Diego State. I thought that was inexcusable. And then what happened last week, I don't know who in the world could have predicted something like that.
So let's talk about the Bruins that are catching now 6.5 down most places from 7 at Arizona. Over-under, understandably, it's 72. It's the late night Pac-12 after dark. Maybe they'll give us another thriller. I just can't jump on the Bruins just yet. I don't trust Kevin Sumlin, who I still can't figure out how he beat Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa, but I guess having Mike Evans and Johnny Manziel will do that. For me, it's a stay away, but I'm curious to get your thoughts here.
Well, you know, we had to turn our picks in for Point Spread Weekly, our VSIN magazine yesterday, and I turned in UCLA, and it was 8 at a lot of spots. So, Doug, I jumped right back on the bandwagon. But I took a good number on this team. I did bet it. Did not bet it big. I'll say just a normal bet for me this week because I'm still a little bit gun-shy about the Bruins. But, you know, you consider what happened last week. You win in a monstrous comeback. You're down 32, an 18-point dog. You went on the road. This could be a flat spot, you know, for UCLA. But, I'm not going to look at it that way. I actually think, you know, this team probably is going to build off what happened last week. You got to be encouraged. I think maybe Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the quarterback, is going to have a lot more confidence. You know, he passed for 507. He rushed for 57 last week. That was the basically the breakout game of his career if he keeps going in the right direction. We'll see. But, you know, when I look at UCLA, too, my other concern is that pass defense is terrible. That's one thing a lot of people overlooked. You know, when you win a game 67-63, your defense sucks. And the UCLA's pass defense has been terrible all season. And that's a concern here. Khalil Tate, the last time out, threw for 185, ran for 129 against Texas Tech. That was 2 weeks ago. So he can obviously do a lot of damage against this UCLA defense. I'm not going to worry so much about the letdown spot. I'm going to hope that Dorian Thompson-Robinson gained some confidence last week and that this team picked up some momentum, you know, from that Washington State comeback. And basically what you said is the reason why I went ahead and took the 8 with the Bruins. Now, you can still take 7 at a few spots out there. I can't lay more than a touchdown with Kevin Sumlin in a spot like this. So, you know, this could be a Pac-12 shootout, one of those classic Pac-12 after dark shootouts. But I decided to, instead of playing the total, cause it's a little bit unpredictable, to me, I went ahead and took a little bit more than a touchdown with the Bruins because I just, never think it's a good idea to lay big numbers with Kevin Sumlin. You know, the same thing I said before Arizona played at Hawaii in the season opener. You know, how could you lay 11 points or more with Kevin Sumlin on the road? I just couldn't lay this type of number with him at home. And I think maybe UCLA is going to be in a, you know, Bruins being a little bit different frame of mind here, better frame of mind. And I really think they should be live dogs in this spot. Now, if they get run over, I'm not going to be shocked. But I'm hopeful here that maybe UCLA and Dorian Thompson-Robinson turned a little bit of a corner last week.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I was thinking team total maybe for Arizona, just given UCLA's defense. But for me, it's a pass. Now, a lot can change between now. I'm going to have to submit my plays. Let's keep it in the Pac-12. I like Cal a lot when at 3. Now it's up to 4.5. There was a big move on the Bears. ASU, I've been impressed. Look, first, I love Herm. He had the cubicle next to me. We've talked about this pod. Love Herm. I was very surprised with when he went in, you know, when he went into East Lansing and got that win. But much like you were saying, what gets overlooked with UCLA and that improbable win was how bad their defense is. What gets overlooked here with that win at East Lansing was that they only scored 10 points. And, yes, it's a big win, but I just don't trust this. I mean, Cal's got a loaded defense, and I have to side with the Bears here, although the line is up to 4.5.
Yeah, this is going to be a wait-and-see game for me. There's a 5 out there if you like the dog here. If you like the Sun Devils as dogs, you can still get a 5, but you're right. It's tough to get a real accurate read on Arizona State because at times I see Jaden Daniels, a freshman quarterback, and think that, you know, they got a chance to be pretty good offensively, but they haven't really, you know, put it together for 4 quarters against a good opponent. Last week, Daniels threw for 345. in that loss to Colorado, but the Buffaloes jumped up 14-0 in that game, and then the Sun Devils were in chase mode at that point. Herm Edwards' defense torched for 475 yards in that game. I think the situation with Cal and why I'm laying off this game right now, you know, Arizona State was in a flat spot last week after the win at Michigan State, so it's set up pretty good for a play on Colorado. This week, I wonder if Cal's in a treacherous spot.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Oxford, you beat Mississippi in a game that goes down to the last second. That's a big win on the road against an SEC team. You mentioned the Cal defense. Evan Weaver, 22 tackles in that game last week for the Bears, and Justin Wilcox, one of the best defensive coaches in the country. So I think, if anything here, I might look under the total. I know it's a really low total. I think, Doug, what is it right now, about 40, the last I saw? I think the Cal Arizona State total was hanging around 40. I can't see much scoring at all in this game on Friday night. In fact, there is a 40.5 out there. That's the best number you could bet under. I think it looks like a 20-14 type of game or something like that. It's going to be ugly. I think the Sun Devils are going to have a chance to hang around. I do not think it's a great spot for Cal off the win at Mississippi. So it's a little bit of a wait-and-see game for me.
All right, good. You are on a game on Saturday morning. We'll start there. Anytime you can weave the Glass Bowl into the show, you do that. And the Toledo's hosting BYU. Cougs -2.5 after getting kind of run out, really, at home against Washington. Now have to go to Toledo. And we're a strange game for me, at least. I have zero opinion. What about you?
Yeah, that UCLA is a play for me, and Toledo is going to be as well. UCLA is late night, and Toledo is an early morning game, but take 2.5 here. I don't think this number is going to 3, but, you know, maybe it will. So I guess I should sit back here because this is one I haven't bet yet, but I thought maybe once it hit 3, you're going to see sharp money on Toledo. The Cougars really have had a brutal schedule to open this season, man. This team's worn down, and you could see it last week against Washington. BYU was off back-to-back overtime wins, you know, at Tennessee, home against USC. That was a horrible spot for BYU last week. And Chris Peterson and the Huskies went in there and rolled over BYU 45-19. It's just, very few teams have had a tougher schedule than BYU's had in the first month. Now you got to hit the road. You're going back to the Eastern time zone for an early kickoff. This is, 9 a.m. Pacific time when this game kicks off. So the situation does not set up well for BYU here. I like the dog. You can put me on the record for +2.5 now, but, I guess hold off. Don't pull the trigger. See if it hits 3. Brian Kobach last week for Toledo, 228 yards rushing. Mitchell Gladani, the quarterback, he actually ran for 119 and threw for a touchdown. Pretty good performance by the Rockets against Colorado State on the road, 41-35. I like this Toledo team, and I'm not really sure why BYU is a favorite here, Doug. I made Toledo a 2-point favorite, so I'll take the Rockets.
All right, yeah, maybe just straight power ratings there. Obviously, the spot, to your point, certainly favors Toledo here at its home turf. A game you and I are opposite sides, although mine was like a lean on Minnesota at Purdue. It's a coin flip. Pick 'em is your line. Both teams off a bye. Now, this Minnesota team, kind of lucky in a lot of their games, right? The Fresno State converting the fourth and long. We all had the Bulldogs +3, and that pushed. And then I was on Georgia Southern plus the points, and it was just a flat spot total play, and obviously that was the right side. But at some point, it'll catch up with them. But I like them here coming off the bye, but I am curious just how good they are because Purdue's also off a bye, and Purdue's got an explosive offense.
Yeah, here's the deal. Golden Gopher's been the luckiest team in the country right now. Watch the opening game against South Dakota State, and the Jackrabbits had that game won. They fumbled on an RPO play with about 6-7 minutes to go. Minnesota cashes it in, comes back to win 28-21. That was a game I really felt like the Jackrabbits outplayed the Gophers for most of the way. And then Minnesota wins in overtime at Fresno State, another comeback. Another comeback against Georgia Southern, 35-32. So you got some close calls here, and now the Gophers hit the road to play a Purdue team that's going to be out for revenge because Jeff Brohm was embarrassed last year. And I've praised Jeff Brohm a lot, but I'm going to rip him right here because he's done a really poor job in the non-conference schedule. He was punting in Nevada territory You know, in Reno in the season opener, he let off the gas with a 17-point lead and blew the game. You know, a lot of times guys like Jeff Brohm are better as an underdog coach because they stay aggressive. You know, he's a big favorite and he's got a lead. He tends to sit on the lead, and that was the wrong thing to do, and that led to a loss at Reno. You know, he goes back home the next week against Vandy, and Purdue's up 42-24 on Vanderbilt late in the game, and Brohm's got his quarterback, Elijah Sindelar, running around out there, and like the next to last or last offensive play Purdue has, he suffers a concussion. Why is your quarterback running around with an 18-point lead at the end of the game? Now, he suffers a concussion. He's out last week against TCU, or 2 weeks ago, and then you got to play a freshman quarterback against Gary Patterson defense, and you get blown out. Brohm has done a really poor job managing the first month of the schedule here for Purdue. Now, they have not declared Elijah Sindelar back in, but Brohm was quoted before the TCU game saying that Sindelar had a slight concussion. If he said that before the TCU game when he thought he might come back, Purdue's actually had a bye week here to get ready for this game. And I would be shocked if Sindelar is not back on the field. He was one of the leading passers in the nation through two games. He's a veteran quarterback. Gives him a much better shot to win. I think this is a, you know, an angry, desperation type of spot for Purdue here. Things have really gone wrong. They were beat by Minnesota bad last year up in Minneapolis. I think Jeff Brohm off a bye also, Doug. Both teams off an open week here. Brohm off the bye with his quarterback back. He's got to win this game at home, man. This is a huge game for the Boilers, and I actually took +1 on this. I think that's still out there. It's mostly a pick 'em now.
Well, you were the man who called the outright win for Purdue at home against Ohio State last year, so I'll support you in terms of having to read on this program, your alma mater, albeit, as well. Let's keep it in the Big Ten, and you're grabbing the points here in Nebraska. The line's come up, went to 18, then now it's back down to 17 flat. It was 17.5 for most of the week. You're taking the dog head home here in Lincoln.
Yeah, it's a dangerous spot, too, and this is just going to be a normal play for me. It's not like a big bet because I'm always leery of Ohio State against most Big Ten teams because Buckeyes just have the offensive firepower to blow a game open. You know, we've seen that. Ask Miami of Ohio about that. Some of the Cincinnati, you know, some of the teams that Buckeyes face here early, when they get on a roll, they can be dangerous. But I like the home dog in this spot here. It's you know, before the season, a lot of people thought Nebraska was going to be the best team in the Big Ten West. That is not the case. Right now it's Wisconsin, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. The Huskers struggled a little bit early in the season. But I think you're going to have an electric crowd in this spot. You got a quarterback in Adrian Martinez who can move the ball against the Buckeyes defense. And, you know, the first time out on the road is a little bit tricky to lay a number like this. So I did take 17.5. Like you said, it was 18. I missed the 18 briefly. I took a little bit at 17.5. And I expect the dog to be in this, Doug, because it's a night game in Lincoln. Buckeyes first time out on the road laying a huge number. I can't imagine that this is going to be easy and Ohio State's just going to go in there and blow out Nebraska. I think the Huskers are going to put up a pretty good fight here. So give me the points with Nebraska.
Can't fault you there. It is dangerous to get in front of that Ohio State team that can just rip off points. But we'll see. We'll see. Like you said, they're on the road. Much different situation.
Actually, you know what? One thing I should mention, too. I sit on the road for the first time. Ohio State did go to Indiana and crush the Hoosiers,
right.
So I forgot about that. That was a road game in Bloomington, 51-10. But this Nebraska team's much better than Indiana.
Good point. Good clarification there. Let's keep in the conference. Talk me off Maryland +6.5 against Penn State.
You know, I lean to the Maryland side myself, so I really don't want to talk you off it. This game features two coaches that I really don't like. It's James Franklin, who comes up short in a lot of big games. He's not a great game manager, but he has destroyed Maryland the past couple of years. I'm going to pull the number up for you. I was looking at this couple nights ago. I don't like Michael Oxley. When he was at New Mexico, he was a horrendous head coach. He went 2-26, and his team was more of a mess off the field than on the field. Maybe he's learned some things from Nick Saban, and is a much better coach, you know, head coach now than he was when he was in Albuquerque. But I did not believe in Maryland when it was going to face Temple. on the road laying a touchdown. I thought the Terps might get exposed in that spot, and they did. You know, they ran up some big numbers against a couple of bad teams in Howard and Syracuse. I do think Syracuse is a bad team. So I'm not completely sold. This Maryland team is legit. And I don't think, you know, I'm not really sure about Penn State because Buffalo is not as bad as we thought maybe. And, you know, Pitt's obviously a respectable team. So the fact that Penn State struggled the past couple weeks, I don't think should be, you know, a major red flag or anything. But I'll give you this, if you're a little bit gun-shy about the Terps.
UB's better than we thought, but they were still losing at halftime, Penn State was.
Oh, I know.
Getting out game
I'm aware of that.
So,
hey,
torn.
James Franklin, three straight wins and covers against the Terps, if you want to be talked off it. The past two by a combined score of 104-6. So there you go.
More with Matt Eumanns in a moment, but first, a message from Dollar Shave Club. When I talk about Dollar Shave Club, I can't stress enough the quality of their products. They've spent years developing, crafting, refining everything. They have everything I use to look, feel, and smell my best. You name it, they have it, and I actually use it. I've been a Dollar Shave Club member for years, and as amazing as their shave stuff is, Dollar Shave Club is way more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club has you covered head to toe. They have everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and more. And Dollar Shave Club can keep you automatically stocked up on the products you use. You get what you want whenever you need it, whether that's once a month or just a few times a year. I never have to waste time at a store wondering if what I'm getting is any good. As a Dollar Shave Club member, I know what I'm getting is the highest quality. And right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and Post Shave Do. The best part is you can try it for just $5. After that, the restock box ships regular size products at regular prices. Get your ultimate starter set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/bets. That's dollarshaveclub.com/bets. All right, back with Matt. Let's go to Nevada and Hawaii. This is a game I was circling for the over, and this one, another late-night game, and you'll lay the 2.5 here with Hawaii. By the way, has failed to cover. Now, Hawaii's a dog here, but they did finally cover against Central Arkansas. It was the first time they had covered after 18 previous games of not covering as a favorite.
Yeah, the first time under Nick Rolovich, Hawaii is now 1-10-1, I think, as a favorite under Rolovich against the spread. But now the Warriors hit the road to Reno, and they have not played well on the Mountain West road. And especially when you look at their past performances here in Reno, I'm a little bit concerned about Cole McDonald and the Hawaii passing attack on the road against a pretty good Nevada defense. Nevada is slightly better than what I thought preseason because the freshman quarterback Carson Strong has stepped up. The senior quarterback, Christian Solano, had a broken hand. He's back in there. So now Nevada's got two quarterbacks. What's as strong to not even play against UTEP last week. Nevada got the win there 37-21 in El Paso. Solano was a guy who actually passed for 182 and rushed for 100. So Nevada's got a couple quarterbacks it can play. I actually like the home side here. Initially thinking I was going to look at Hawaii, but once I started to dig into some of the road issues that the Warriors have had, especially in the Mountain West and especially in Reno, I think the Nevada side is going to be my side in this game. And I did lay 2 yesterday, just not a big bet. And I also made a small bet over the total of 64 without knowing the weather forecast. But like I said, those are not big plays for me this week. I went with Nevada -2 over the total of 64. And I think this is going to be a game that a lot of bettors are going to look to play, Doug, because it's an ESPN2 game. It's a late kickoff on Saturday night, 10:30 Eastern. So those late games on the board, I know people like opinions and picks on those games. And I'm going to go with Nevada and the over.
Can't fault you there. Those are the two sides I would play as well. I was looking more towards the over. And the side. I want to go back to the Pac-12 because I have a couple things. So I'm definitely going to bet on Washington against USC. The question is, do I take the side or the team total over 35? Now, I think this could be a blowout, but USC, I like their receivers, and you know, now with who's I don't know who's going to play quarterback with the second or third stringer, but I feel like I can get Washington to 35 points fairly confidently. What's your read on this game?
Well, I lean to the Washington side here. I just think this USC team's played a really tough schedule in the first month. You've had, obviously a lot of attrition, especially at quarterback. I like a lot of what I've seen from this new air raid offense that Graham Harrell's installed with the Trojans. I was on USC against Utah last week, but I would not back the Trojans here on the road against Washington. I think the Huskies already got their wake-up call.
Right.
And that was that loss to Cal. And, now that they got their wake-up call, I think Chris Peterson's got this team heading in the right direction. It's a really young defense, but it's talented. Washington's going to get a lot better. You saw that last week in Provo. I think Jacob Eason is really starting to find his groove in the Washington offense. It's not surprising that he had a little bit of trouble early in the season, especially against Cal. But he's got, 73% completions, 10 touchdowns, 2 picks at this point. So I think Eason is really starting to, get in rhythm with that offense. And then you look at Clay Helton. That was nice last week. He needed that win badly. I think a lot of USC fans might actually be rooting against him at this point because they want Urban Meyer to be the next USC coach. But, Matt Fink comes in, throws for 351, 3 touchdowns, third-string quarterback. I just kind of feel like the Trojans are going to run out of magic here on the road, and their defense is going to have trouble stopping the Huskies. I have not played this yet, but I might, and I'm leaning to the Washington side.
Yeah, the lines, some spots have 10.5, so if you like the 10, I would probably grab it now. For those who are eyeing the Huskies here. Elsewhere in the Pac-12, I've been fading Stanford pretty hard the last couple of weeks. I think this is a play on the over. I think their offense under Shaw in these last couple of weeks is just kind of playing to not get blown out. But I think this is a game where they can compete, and they're obviously favored on the road, and they can score. I think the over 57.5 in Corvallis is where I'm headed.
It's interesting. Last week I was at Stanford, and I was there for the Oregon game. And David Shaw just drives you crazy with his play calling sometimes. I know he's trying to manage the game and run the ball and, keep Oregon's offense off the field because he knew the Ducks had too much speed for the Stanford secondary and he couldn't let the game get out of control. But, Doug, it's the game's starting to get away, and it's 9-10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and Stanford has 58 yards passing. Now, that's ridiculous. And that's a quarterback in K.J. Costello who led the Pac-12 in passing efficiency last year. He's got some talented receivers. You got to open things up a little bit. As far as this game, I like Stanford a little bit on the road. It's basically a fade Oregon State type of spot, but Oregon State's not bad. This team is actually is not as bad as it's been the past couple of years. Let's put it that way. I think Beavers have improved a little bit. I lean to Stanford's side. I'm always concerned about a David Shaw team putting up a lot of points, but, I don't necessarily disagree with you, I guess.
Yeah, the lines come down to 4.5, 4, so I misspoke a second ago. So that's where I'm headed there. I have some top team plays and some bottom team plays. We'll start with Alabama and Ole Miss. Look, Ole Miss beat Bama back-to-back years, and that was like in the Chad Kelly days. And I just don't think he's forgotten that, and he always runs up the score. And that defense, for whatever reason, now they start 4 true freshmen, I believe, on defense, so then there's bound to be a mistake, you would think, and give up points, but they've only allowed, I think, 2 touchdowns. The first stringer defense on Bama has only allowed 2 touchdowns this year, so I can't go over. I'd lay the points maybe, but I'm going to go Alabama team total over 49.5, I think I saw at DraftKings, FanDuel. I just don't see it, and if they give up a touchdown, I mean, Tua stays in a little longer.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking to play Bama games, I think you're looking over the team total, or you're going to look to play Bama in the first half. I don't, you look at the Patriots game last week, and no. Bill Belichick finally did something that I've always said NFL coaches should do more, is pull the starting quarterback out with a big lead in the fourth quarter. And that's what you always have to be concerned about in college football, leaving that back door open. And, we've seen that happen to Bama. Saw it happen to the Patriots last week when Jarrett Stidham throws a pick 6, I would only look in Bama games to play over the team total or play the first half necessarily. And by the way, Nick Saban has really beat the stuffing out of the Rebels recently. So I would expect that to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I just have to do the team total. The offense is, they could put up 35 in the first half and then, you'll get their
maybe even more, 42 in the first half. But the, it is a high number to get over 50 and to bet on it against an Ole Miss team. But I just think it's a – I think they're dead man walking. Honestly, they had a demoralizing loss at home. They're hitting the road, going to Bryant-Denny Stadium. I just don't see how they come and have any sort of, like, confidence that they can do anything against this Bama team. I just don't. But you're right. You got to be careful laying those big numbers. And I was on the team total under for the Jets last week, under 10. So that was a horrendous beat as far as I'm concerned. The offense still – they couldn't even get first downs, and they scored.
No, it was a joke. I was talking to a Vegas bookmaker a couple days ago, and he said the Jets offense could have played for 7 hours and not scored. And, you know, that's actually true. So it's just a couple of fluke scores, and sometimes that's the way you get beat. I don't typically get involved in these big spread games unless I'm going to play a team like that in the first half.
Right. Well, let's talk about Clemson at North Carolina, because I really like Clemson in the first half here. Now, one of the many reasons you always wonder about coaches' sportsmanship and things like that, Dabo obviously has a lot of respect for Mac Brown. So while the line's 26.5 and enticing, I think 14.5 is the play. Tigers have the best defense in the country. They have not given up a touchdown. They've given up some field goals, the first stringers have. And I don't see how North Carolina gets a touchdown or even maybe even any points at all in the first half. So covering 14.5 against a team in UNC that has not looked that strong at all in the first half. They've started slowly, and they have a young quarterback. I don't see how Clemson doesn't cover the 14.5.
You know, I like Sam Howell. I liked him a lot, but like you said, he's a freshman facing a dominant defense. I know everybody's scratching their heads a little bit about why's Trevor Lawrence off to a slow start, but at some point here, he's going to hit a groove and he's going to light somebody up, and it could be the Tar Heels this week. So a freshman quarterback against that defense, it's going to be a little bit of a reality for the Tar Heels in this spot. So I felt the same way. Like I said, I don't get involved in a lot of these big number games, but I would look at Clemson maybe in the first half, or I would only look at the Clemson side here. I think North Carolina's in a lot of trouble with a young quarterback.
Yeah, the number just feels low. Another game you're on in the ACC, so to speak, is Virginia against Notre Dame. We both like UVA on the road here. The line keeps coming up, and I believe it's, what, 12.5 at last check? 12.5. Even there's 113 out there. So this number keeps coming up. It was 11.5. on Monday when I last saw. So I guess wait this out. It could go up to 13s across the board here and maybe even higher.
Well, you're right. There is a 13 on the board, and I'm probably going to grab that today because I noticed yesterday this number is creeping up, and I thought, I'll just go ahead and wait and see where it goes. I'm not really sure why it's going up because this is a bad spot for the Irish. Think about it, last week's Georgia game, and I liked Notre Dame last week. I was on that side, and the number I took 14.5, Doug, thinking, or 15. I took 15 at the South Point on Friday night, and I thought, well, that number's not going to go any higher. And it went higher the next day. Everybody just piled on Georgia. So I didn't get the best number, but still got there with the Irish. That game was hyped all summer, okay? That was a physical game. Both teams beat the crap out of each other. But more than anything, it's just a game that the Irish had circled. They looked forward to for several months. They get there, and they fight like hell and lose 23-17. You've got to be a little bit flat the next week, not to mention beat up after a game like that. So I think Virginia might have been in a look-ahead spot last week, and maybe you could draw a little bit of a line through that performance. I know the Cavs were open a lot of eyes. They were flirting with a pretty dangerous upset.
It was a huge sandwich game because even FSU not being the FSU of old, they're still a big name, especially when you're Virginia and you get to play them at home on a Saturday night. So it was a classic sandwich spot, and that's why they came out so gross
right in
the first half, and that's why a lot of sharp people grabbed the 28.5 with Old Dominion. But that doesn't mean that's what they truly are. I think Virginia's a solid team. Now, Perkins is nicked up. That does concern me with his mobility, but I have to grab the points here.
That's a play I've got here, too. I'm taking the points with Virginia. It's I think the Irish would get off to a slow start in this game, too. So you might want to look maybe at something in the first half on the Cavs. It's just it's really difficult for a team to get back up right away after an emotional, physical game like the Irish had against Georgia. And then you come back, you're going to be a little bit flat against Virginia. If not, you know, I love Brian Kelly. He's one of my favorite coaches. But he's going to have to be a magician to get his team fired up to play an A game again 2 weeks in a row.
And then a couple games, maybe not on many people's radar, but I got to ask you, huge game in UMass hosting Akron. And widely perceived as the two worst teams in college football. Definitely UMass is perceived, but Akron also winless, ATS. I actually did like laying the 7. I didn't do it. The line has actually gone up to 7.5. Now, I can't do it, but I want no part of UMass, but you can make a case that you don't want any part of the Zips here laying over a touchdown on the road.
You know, somebody mentioned to me about a week or two ago, Akron's the worst team in college football. And I said, nah, I really don't think so. There's a worse one, and it's UMass. And right now you got the Zips laying 7.5 on the road. I could not lay that number. Maybe, you know, if you want to, I don't tease college football games, but if you want to tease Akron down to -1 or something like that, maybe that would be a way to play it. I'm not looking to get involved here with two terrible teams. A lot of times what's interesting, too, the total is 63. A lot of times when two terrible teams hook up, you can get the most entertaining games. So this is one I actually wouldn't mind watching, even though I don't think it's on TV. So I'm staying away from this, but
it's interesting. Yeah, the point spread
really
makes
don't
everything.
Have an opinion here. I don't like betting teams as miserable as UMass, and that's one of my handicapping philosophies. Don't bet too many rotten teams, and that's obviously both the case with both teams here.
Well, it's funny you use the word rotten, because I remember about a decade ago or so, I was big on the Apple Cup when it was a combined one win between Washington and Washington State. I loved Washington. I think it was like laying like 6 on the road, and they actually had the game and the cover. Willingham blew it, and it was a 4th-down pass interference. That was such a bogus call. If I'm remembering correctly, I probably have some details fuzzy. But, yeah, that was a black mark I had on me for you and some others who were really convinced that I was on the right side here, and I sold it hard during the Rotten Apple Cup, as you called it that week.
That was many years ago. That was before Mike Leach got to Washington State,
yeah,
right?
For sure. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's one game that has me intrigued just because of the two teams involved. But there's another game that I actually think I'm going to bet, and I haven't decided if I'm going to bet the first half of the game. But we talk about flat spots, and is there a flatter spot than Central Florida laying 43 off the loss to Pitt, coming home and hosting UConn? I think I have to grab the 43 with the con.
Yeah, like you said, I don't like to bet bad teams, and UConn is in that category as well. But, yeah, I would not look to lay it here with UCF just because it is a little bit of an emotional letdown spot after the loss of Pitt. But man, I'll tell you, I saw a lot of people knocking Central Florida for that loss last week and saying this is a case, you know, the argument against UCF. UCF's been, I would say over the past 3 years, 30-1 or something like that, on maybe a 30-2 stretch. It's hard to knock a team like that. One-point loss on the road to Pitt is, not a sign that UCF is not legitimate and, you know, doesn't belong to be mentioned in the same sentence with the big boys because, hey, don't forget, they did beat, Knights did beat Auburn in a bowl game. They've done a lot of positive things, so. I was just irritated with seeing a lot of people knock UCF on Twitter last week. Like, oh, now that we know they're a fraud because they lost on the road to Pitt. That's BS, man. By the way, UCF has got a loaded quarterback room right now with the freshman Dylan Gabriel, Brandon Wimbush. They've got three quarterbacks that can stick out there and play and win games. I think this team's legit. But you're right, just specifically in this spot, I think UCF is going to be a little bit flat this week off the loss of Pitt, and that's a huge number to try to lay.
So it's 28 in the first half. That intrigues me a little bit. And just to put a bow on your comments, like, we overreact and create extreme sort of conclusions based on one play. So Pitt was in field goal range. Excuse me. UCF was in field goal range, 4th and short, like 4th and medium, like 4th and 4, something like that, up 3. They go for it, didn't get it. And then later they end up kicking as well, like 4th and 8, I want to say, to make it a 3 to a 6-point game. So my point is this. If they convert like a 4th and 4 and get a touchdown and they go up 2 scores, are they all of a sudden not a fraud just because of one play? I mean, one play. That's all it is. So let's just pump the brakes on drawing just extreme conclusions based on like 1 or 2 swing plays. Like, we talk about Eli Manning now phased out. Like, if one or two of these passes doesn't get completed, is he's not a Hall of Famer, or he is a Hall of Famer because of the Super Bowl. It's just so funny, like, how drastic our conclusions are based on one play in one game. But anyways, that's That's the soapbox that we have in this world of sports. But fortunately, we have all the betting lines to kind of dissect and have fun. But I had to get your opinion on those the 43-point spread with UConn and then obviously that toilet bowl with Akron and UMass.
Well, I can tell you that I know you enjoy betting those big point spread games a lot more than I do.
I do.
I know you really love those games, and I don't. But, you know, let the listeners follow you on those games, and I'll stick with the six plays I got. And I always like to bet half times and live bet and stuff like that on Saturdays. So there's nothing better than a college football Saturday with all these games on the board morning to night. I mean, I like the NFL too, but I probably bet 10 times as much on college football.
Yeah.
And there's so many more games, so many more opportunities on the board. It's, I think, much better for the bettors. And
opportunity is the right word. I mean, you have these games where you get these 50-point spreads like Alabama. We've talked about it on the pod before. You have these wide range of games, and you also get the pick-ems between Minnesota and Purdue, so like medium kind of level programs. And then you get the big boys like Georgia and Notre Dame, and then you get these doormat games like Akron and UMass. It's just fun. And then I think everyone's just happier on Saturdays than they are on Sundays too. Like Saturdays, work isn't until Monday, whereas Sunday you're just trying to hang on to the weekend.
I don't know about you, but by about Monday morning, I'm completely worn out from sweating out games all weekend. And
I have a coworker who I guess like top level chess players lose a lot of weight during chess matches.
Oh, I read that story. Yes.
He said that's like him on a Sunday, even though he's constantly eating, he's just sweating in his brain and all. In fantasy and the pick'em leagues and just everything going on, he's like a top master chess player.
Dude, that's actually a great comparison. I mean, that's the way I felt last weekend. It seemed like every game I was on, I was sweating out. You know, it was crazy. But
that's the beauty of the path we've chosen, my friend.
Yep.
All right,
Doug. Well, good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Hope you have a winning weekend, man.
All right, same to you, bud.
Okay, thanks. You bet.
Kicking is for losers.
John Murray, Executive Director of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook, joins me, and I feel like every time we bring you on, there are more examples of kicking and punting.
Yeah, there was a guy that reached out to me on Twitter. He said something like, you're making too many jokes about the kickers. We get it. And I said, I actually responded to him, which I never do, and I just said, you know, it's a fair critique, but I'm not going to stop making these jokes until these coaches stop making these terrible decisions. And I don't see any end in sight to that, do you?
No. I mean, look, Narduzzi set the bar, right? So we're not going to see stuff like that for a while, but...
Yeah, I agree with that. That was unbelievable.
It is interesting. But then you get a guy like John Harbaugh, who had that, I want to say rant, that's the wrong word, but just sort of talked about analytics and all this other stuff. It was refreshing to see, so...
The worst one I saw this weekend was the Ole Miss one. They were down...
Yes.
28-13, and I was paying attention to it because I had a play over 41.5. And one of my colleagues had the same play, and we were watching, and he said, oh, they might kick the field goal. And I said, shut up, basically. There's no chance they're going to kick a field goal. That would make no sense. And then here comes the kicking team. And then they missed the field goal. So we had a good laugh there. That was unbelievable. Matt Luke, Ole Miss coach, is on my list now. Just what is the point of cutting it from 15 to 12? Seriously.
Yeah, Shades of Fangio. I tweeted that.
It just makes no sense.
Someone said that's a good name of a band. And I said, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that was the one. That was the worst one I saw. I got a lot of tweets. David Shaw kicked a field goal down 21-3.
Yep.
Which I didn't agree with, but he did need two touchdowns and a field goal to get there. And it was 4th and 16.
Correct. I agree with that.
So it wasn't really, it was nothing compared to the Matt Luke one. And nothing compared to some of the other things we've seen.
Okay. Let's get to it. I want to get to the big game because we've seen a line move, and that big game is Akron now up to 7.5 at UMass, Mr. Director.
Yeah, no, that's a big one. We've seen some money there. We had some guys, they laid 6, they laid 6.5. We're at 7.5 right now. The Zips in Amherst to take on the Minutemen. Should be a barn burner Saturday.
So that's been sharp action.
Yeah. I mean, guys that are... I mean, the market's been moving up off these bets, so yeah, I would say I have to say yes.
Because you don't just go, it's hard to lay over a touchdown at Warren McGuirk Alumni Stadium.
Yeah, oh, very, very difficult. I don't have an opinion there. I did see last week guys were taking the points on UMass against, I want to say, Coastal Carolina was the matchup.
Right.
And that did not work out well. So but, we've seen the wise guys get involved in UMass games this season. I think the first week of the year, it was the huge line move, Rutgers at home against UMass.
Yeah.
And that number went way up. And UMass actually got out to, I want to say, a 2-touchdown lead, and then Rutgers took over.
Yeah, I think it was a pick six. And so, but yeah. You know what? If it stays on the hook, 7.5, one of these teams will cover because they're both winless against the spread.
That's a great point.
What are some? I'm actually fascinated by that game, so I had to lead with it. I talked to with humans about it earlier here in the pod. So,
did humans have a play on that game?
No, he does not. He stays away from those kind of ugly games. He calls them. He doesn't bet on rotten teams. And then
he does.
And then he doesn't like the big number like Alabama and Clemson games, which I seem to love. So we have different appetites on some of the outlier situations.
Yeah, well, I think you both have a lot of appetites for all kinds of gambling, but as do I, of course. but sure, if you want to call it different appetites, sure. We have seen some money that I respect came in on Navy. They took 11. We're down to 10.5. Navy's at Memphis on Thursday. Hmm. Decent game there. And then there's a bit of a card on Friday. Duke, Virginia Tech has been an interesting one. We've actually taken a lot of money on that game. We had a group laid 2.5 with the Hokies at home. We went to 3, and then a different sharp group took the 3, and we knocked it back down to 2.5. So we've already seen two-way sharp groups going against each other in that Duke-Virginia Tech game. That game's Friday.
Yeah, around the key number. And obviously I saw a big steam on Cal. I liked Cal -3, got some down, mm-hmm. and it's up to 4.5. And even 5 at one spot.
Cal is another one, absolutely. A very sharp group laid 3 early in the week on Cal. And, yes, we're currently at 4.5. So Friday, a pretty good slate, really. And I said that about last Friday. Last Friday was decent. I just my beef with last Friday was they had those two games, USC, Utah, Air Force, Boise, and they somehow scheduled them at the exact same time, which I didn't like. But a pretty good card there. And we did really well on that USC game. USC-Utah last week was really one of the biggest sharp square standoffs of the week in college football.
And maybe you thought doomsday when the quarterback got hurt right away.
Yeah. You got to really give a lot of credit to Graham Harrell, the offensive coordinator there, who was kind of tossed into that job when Cliff Kingsbury left it to take the Arizona Cardinals head coaching job. Mm-hmm. And he's done a great job. I know that USC has a lot of talent. I get that. But anytime you're down to your third quarterback and your offense is still moving the football against a good defense in Utah, you got to give a lot of credit to the play calling.
Yeah, or just throw it up to Pittman like he did, and Pittman comes down with the ball.
Yeah, there's no question. The talent that USC has at the skill positions is through the roof. But I do want to give credit to Harrell. To just plug in a third QB and keep going is pretty impressive.
Fair point. All right, what's the sharp plays from Saturday that you've received in respect?
You want to go to Saturday? South Florida is definitely one. The group took 8.5 with South Florida. They're at home against SMU. We're down to 7.5 here on that game. UCLA, if you want to go down that road again. I know I was on UCLA the first 2 weeks of this season, and then I saw them score like 100 points on Saturday night against Washington State.
Not on them game. For that game?
I was not on them,
yeah,
no.
Matt and I just laughed but, about that game. That was the one time we didn't back them.
No, it was funny because I'd played them against Cincinnati and San Diego State, and then in week 3 or week 4 or whatever, the book needed them huge.
Right.
UCLA huge against Oklahoma. I didn't have a play on the game. But so the point is I rooted for them 3 weeks in a row, and they were awful. And then they come out at Washington State, give up 9 touchdown passes, and win the game outright. I thought that was a pretty funny result.
What was the atmosphere in the book like at that time, or was everyone home and passed out?
I was at home by then. I can imagine that the book was jumping for that game, though. I mean, I was watching it at home. It was certainly exciting. But, yeah, I was not in the book then, but I'm sure there's nothing the crowd loves more than long touchdowns and high-scoring games, and that game had a bit of everything.
So UCLA, what, they grabbed +8 here, and it's down to
they took 8. Yeah, we're all the way down to 6.5 on that game. So I can't disagree. Anytime you have an opportunity to bet against Kevin Sumlin, I cannot fault you for that.
What else you got? I think that one will be another shootout as well. I'm going to limb there, right? What else?
South Carolina. The group laid 2.5. They're at home against Kentucky. We're up to South Carolina -3. Big SEC East showdown there. Here's one where we've seen two-way action. Iowa State Baylor. Two groups laid 2.5 with Iowa State. Different group came in, took 3 with Baylor. So that's a game where it's been bouncing back and forth between that key number with wise guys coming in both ways of it.
Now it's holding steady at 3 in Waco.
Mm-hmm. That should be a pretty interesting game. How about this one? BYU, they laid 1.5 with the Cougars. They're on the road at Toledo. I believe that stadium is called the Glass Bowl.
Yes, it is.
And we're up to 2.5 right now on the Cougars. You know, the Cougars kind of ran out of gas last week. They had overtime games against Tennessee and USC, and then they played Washington last week, and they got sort of run off the field. Tough schedule for the Cougars, and I think that they'll regroup this week on the road against Toledo. And we've seen some sharp money. Agree with that opinion.
Matt likes the home team there. He likes the
Matt likes Toledo.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Head-to-head matchup there. Exactly. Here's one. A group played Notre Dame, and I thought that was kind of an interesting play. Notre Dame coming off of such an emotional game Saturday in Athens against Georgia. Now they go home. They play a 4-0 Virginia team that I think Virginia got caught looking ahead to this game last week, barely beating Old Dominion. They didn't even come close to covering the spread in that game. And we saw a sharp group lay 11.5 with the Irish, and we moved it up to 12.5.
Yeah, I like the dog there. I'm surprised that that group lays the favorite, but there's a lot of groups out there. So I just like the dog there in that one.
Yeah, and then here's one where we saw sharp money come in early in the week that's been resisted by the market. Guy took 10 with USC, and now that number is actually up to 10.5. They're at Washington. Washington, like I mentioned, off of a very good win over BYU. This guy, I really respect him. He took the 10 points, but the markets actually rejected his play and pushed it back the other way.
Yeah, I like Washington there. I think it's a tough spot for the Trojans.
You and humans, you guys just have an opinion on every single game. Speaking of your guys' gambling appetites.
Yeah, and your South Carolina game did not whet my appetite. That was
nothing
not a game.
There. Okay.
And nor Baylor, Iowa State. I haven't done a whole lot of Big 12 this year, except for Oklahoma against UCLA. That was the one game I got my Bruin money back, and then some. That was an angry, angry play.
You know what's setting up to be, I don't want to say it's going to be as much as Oklahoma-UCLA because that was a massive decision, but given the time slot and the spread and everything, I think Ohio State at Nebraska kind of sets up the same way that game did, where our ticket count on that game is already about 15-1 on the Buckeyes. Everybody's going to be on the Buckeyes. I think that number's really high. But I know that everyone's going to bet Ohio State. We're going to need Nebraska huge, and that'll probably be the big swing game for the books in Nevada on Saturday night.
That is funny. 15-1 already.
Yeah, now it's early in the week, so you know the huge majority of these tickets on this game are going to come in Friday and Saturday. But that split will be condensed by kickoff, but it's still going to be very one-sided with the books all needing Nebraska. Nebraska really should be 4-0. They blew that game against Colorado a couple of weeks ago, and the final score of their game this past week against Illinois was a little bit misleading. They outgained the Illini by like 300 yards, and they barely won. So they've been a little mistake-prone, but I do think Nebraska is a pretty solid team. Now, Ohio State's a team that's just killing people.
Killing.
76 unanswered points. That was my second favorite field goal of the week, was Miami of Ohio was up 2-0, and they kicked a field goal at like the 3-yard line on 4th and goal. I actually said to the guy I was watching the game with, like, what is the point of this? Like, do they really think going up 5-0 is going to make a difference? I did not know Ohio State was going to reel off 76 consecutive points, but I do know that Miami of Ohio would have been better served by at least trying to score a touchdown.
I don't know. I'm actually disagreeing with you.
I'll give you two more plays. We've seen some sharp money on here. We saw a group take Cincinnati. They were laying 2.5 on the road at Marshall. That number is now 3.5. And then a Big 12 game for you, DK, Kansas State. They took 5.5 and 5. Kansas State now a 4-point underdog on the road at Oklahoma State.
I like that side a lot. I just can't pull the trigger.
There's a lot to choose from. It's a college football Saturday.
I've had a lot of bad beats in my life. Now, I grabbed the 5.5. I laid the 5.5, and I was fine. But for the best bet on Daily Wager, I had to give out my best bet. It was Texas, and I had to lay the 6.5.
Oh, yeah. You know, I got lucky, or not really lucky. I had -5.5 in that game. I don't really think I got lucky. I don't know what the Texas punt returner was doing.
The guy's like sliding on his back, and
Oklahoma State punted. That was essentially them waving the white flag, right? That the game's over. We're just going to punt it away. You guys win.
Correct. And it was near midfield. Yeah. It wasn't even like he was protecting like the inside the 10.
The kid comes charging up to return the punt. It was a terrible punt. It might have even bounced back the other way. And, of course, he fumbles it. Oklahoma State scores a touchdown to cover the spread for certain bettors, yes.
I mean, first of all, this was I believe a senior was returning the punt because at the end of the first half, the freshman muffed in the final minute on his own 10 to allow the Pokes to score a touchdown. This game was as one-sided as I have handicapped and nailed, and it just was like, this is it. I just said, I was like, this is a Texas double-digit win. I'm sorry. It just is. I've seen both teams play, and it was to a T.
Yeah.
There's just something a little off with this Oklahoma State team. They go through, everyone's like, oh, their offense is prolific. It's really not. It's good, but not for four quarters. And it has moments and stretches where it just kind of sputters. And that's what happened at UT, and UT scored easily. And it's really annoying to get burned on that for a best bet.
Yeah, that's tough for your best bet. What are you leaning towards for your best bet this week?
I don't know. I've been very – like, I went baseball on Sunday. Which
I am so glad that I don't have to ever give a bet. I have so much pressure on me coming up with a pick every week for Mr. Musburger's VSiN Super Contest card. That's all I can handle, man.
In chalk, I get to do more than one play for the ESPN.com. I am 15-7. So I'm doing
really
well there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Again,
yeah,
I got to do 5.5 for the Texas game.
Yeah.
I've had a couple, I turn them in Wednesday. I have to turn them in very soon, actually. But how's this for a bad beat? So that was my Saturday best bet. How about my Sunday best bet? How many times are you going to lose a run line bet when your team, when your team scores four runs and gives up no earned runs?
That's awful. What game was that?
That was the Brewers Pirates, where the Brewers were throwing a no hitter through
six.
And then the seventh inning, the second baseman. Ugh.
I was watching that game because, I'm a Nationals fan. I'm hoping that the Brewers Nationals wildcard game is in D.C. I'm going to fly home if it is and go to the game. So I visit my family, my mom. But, I mean, the Brewers never lose. Have they lost a game since Christian Yelich got hurt?
No.
They win every day.
Did they win last night?
Yes.
Okay, so they're 11-2 now since Yelich got hurt. The Pirates the Pirates hadn't won since they've been fighting in the bullpen. They had lost 8 straight, I think, at that point. And they were getting no hit. And then all of a sudden the errors come and somehow, it is what it is.
I think that game is actually going to end up being in Milwaukee. From what I've read, the Nationals don't really plan to go all out for home field. And this weekend they're playing the Indians, who have to go all out for their own wild card considerations. So I do think the game's going to end up being in Milwaukee, but we'll get to that next week, I'm sure. I don't really have nothing else really to report as of Wednesday in terms of sharp action. I can tell you that the book is going to need Nebraska in the worst way on Saturday.
Yeah.
I can see that coming a mile away.
Exactly. Well put. All right, my friend, always good catching up. We'll talk tomorrow NFL, which I know you love to do, and I'm curious to what you get.
Love. Yes, sir. I'll talk to you in the morning.
That guy is kryptonite on a stick.
All right. Thanks to Matt Humans. Thanks to John Murray. A lot of plays, a lot of analysis here, and a lot of input from behind the counter. So this was a fun podcast. We even got a little baseball talk in there, and I got to complain about some bad beats.
You feel better?
Slightly.
Hey.
I'd like to say no, but no, I do.
A little therapy session is always good.
Right. Okay, my friends, tomorrow the NFL podcast, and we'll recap next week. I'm really interested to see how this Akron UMass game plays out.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be an exciting game.
It might be the big screen for me Saturday afternoon.
There you go.
I have to find it on some ESPN.
Go to the bar and ask them to put that game on and see what they say.
No, I get to watch all. I get to soak it all in at home. 5 TVs, get it all on the big. That one's going to be on the big screen.
I'm excited. This is my first Saturday off. I'll be flying down to Charlotte.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No.
But I get to Charlotte at noon, so I can.
Okay.
So, but yeah.
Have you scoped out? So what are you doing in Charlotte?
I'll be going to the race on Sunday, but Saturday I got free, so I'll figure it out and go to the nearest sports bar.
So are you, so you already scoped out where to go and things like that?
Yeah, and Ohio State's got the night game, which gives me plenty of time. I actually have a friend that I grew up with lives down there. He's going to be coming over for the race too, so we're going to.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Good for you, dude. That should be a fun weekend. All right, guys, see, we'll catch everyone tomorrow for the NFL podcast.